Welcome to episode 31 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. I'm Eric J. Barzeski in Erie, Pennsylvania. Joining me as always, Jeff Smith in Washington. Hello.
Hey.
You did some work in New Orleans, huh?
Yeah, we 10 of us flew down to New Orleans and did some disaster relief, gutting some homes, just taking care of people in neighborhoods and stuff, and wow, what a mess.
Yeah, it's still a mess down there, huh? Surprising. I thought maybe some cleanup had occurred, and it seems very little has.
I think that a fair amount of cleanup has happened. I mean, when you look at the downtown area, and then the French Quarter looks great. You've got a lot of really solid looking neighborhoods there, but anywhere in the kind of surrounding areas, it really is. It's just extraordinary. You have very few homes that are put back together. The vast majority of homes that we saw had been underwater and were not yet back together. Right. And the most you had was a FEMA trailer out in front of a house. So
it was
something.
Poor segue, but speaking of cleaning up, Tiger Woods cleaned up en route to his 11th major of the British Open, the Open Championship. Did it in convincing style, really. I mean, he and Chris DeMarco, like the Masters a couple of years ago, were up there. Everyone else was pretty much way back of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Tiger was on form, and I caught the highlights, and I just really enjoyed the fact that he played a little bit different style of golf in that process.
It really spun some of the distance debate on its head. The people who are, anti-ball, anti-distance, and so on, still found things to say, such as, what kind of test is this that he doesn't even need to hit driver,
Yeah.
They're never happy. Forget it. He finds a course where he doesn't need to hit driver, where he says, you know what? I'm going to play a very conservative game here. And they still say, oh my goodness, it's a tragedy.
Well, it's Tiger Woods. Come and cut history some slack here. We got the greatest golfer of all time playing the game.
And they all love the course. As a matter of saying, Tiger Woods said, hey, it's a great golf course. I'd love to see it come back. We'll talk a bit more about that later, but what struck you as the most impressive thing about this win for Tiger?
Oh, his iron play. I mean, the fact that he was hitting 5-wood, 2-iron off the tee, and then knocking 4-irons onto the green all day long. I mean, with his accuracy off the fairway, I thought was awesome. And again, that really proves that all the naysayers are wrong, because he was so good with the long irons.
Right. He actually left the 5-iron in the bag the 5-wood in the bag for the 2-iron, so it was the 3-wood off the tee many times. Hit the driver the one time in the first round and said, forget that.
Right.
And we saw it in the final round. Sergio Garcia took driver many times, had wedges into the greens when Tiger was hitting 4-iron, and rarely got inside of Tiger's 4-iron. So a super impressive display, and everything that Tiger talked about as far as being difficult to control the spin out of the burnt out rough, even though it was, but still out of the hay, basically.
Right.
Very, very difficult to control the spin. Much better to be in the fairway, even if it is with a 4-iron. Jack Nicklaus hit, I think 20 some drivers or something, so not a lot, but certainly more than one. He hit a lot of 1-irons at Muirfield in 1968, I believe, or 66. And got a lot of credit for that, being a thinking man. So Tiger Woods certainly doing that. Sergio Garcia failing to mount a charge in his duck-looking, outfit. Ernie Els finally gets his name on a major leaderboard, but then fails to do anything. Jim Furyk falls back.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really stepped up and challenged Tiger except, again, Chris DeMarco. So, certainly a gutty thing.
I think it wasn't, what impressed me here is I think that this is going to be a very satisfying win for Tiger, because this is the kind of the golf that he likes to play. You listen to him in interviews afterwards. He really enjoyed, after I saw him tap that final putt in and then the tears started flowing, I think he really enjoyed the shot making and how the golf course forced that.
Right. He's a fan of playing well to win, not just winning. And
exactly.
He says he had one of the best ball striking weeks of his career. And he certainly needed it, since he was hitting such long shots into the greens. I think one graphic showed that on the second or something of the final round, Garcia was 97 yards ahead of Tiger, yet Tiger was inside. Sergio 3-putted, I would think, on that hole. So what are you going to do? We'll certainly talk more about this later. But certainly a resounding win for Tiger. A lot of critics silence now. DeMarco and Tiger, of course, were united by the whole parental loss thing, but certainly important for Tiger Woods to get this one off.
Yeah, very, very impressive.
2 weeks ago, we didn't do a show because the British Open was going on, and we were watching that. Natalie Gold was cut into a playoff at the Jamie Farr
Club.
Miyun Kim, yeah. Forgot the pigtail girl. At the Jamie Farr, Owens Corning, yada yada, something or other. Natalie Gulbis played stellar golf on the front nine, got a nice big lead, birdied 10, and then had 8 straight pars. Then played 3 more par 5s in a row. 17 and 18 are both par 5s at the course. Mm-hmm. She played 18, 17, 18, parred them all despite having a 20 or 30 yard advantage over Mi Yoon Kim. Mi Yoon Kim finally rolls in a longer birdie putt at the third playoff hole to win.
Right.
Certainly an impressive performance by Gulbis, but she couldn't close it out. 8 straight pars to close her round, and then 3 more in the playoff, so 11 straight pars. Not going to get the job done, especially with the length and whatnot that she has and all those par 5s closing holes.
Yeah, well, I think what this proves to us is that she is yet to prove she's a true contender. I mean, we don't see Natalie on a regular basis in playoffs, and we've got to see this more. I mean, maybe this is going to be incentive for her now. She's an awesome player, and she's been close for a long time. She's still young, granted, yeah. But I think it just proves that she's not really proven in down the stretch. And so, yeah, she's definitely got to turn it up a notch, settle herself down the closer she gets to the end of a tournament.
Yep. Doesn't bode well for us as prognosticators either, since we both picked her to win at the 27-hole mark.
Yeah.
If you remember.
Yes.
I had to goad you into it a little bit, but we did pick her to win. I mean, right.
Led me astray.
If she could have, you know, made one putt with that damn hammy, you know, somewhere in the last 11 holes.
I know, the hammy.
We would have been that much more intelligent, apparently.
Vindicated.
Yes, that's right. But will she win this year? You know, she's apparently, you know, she's running out of time. She's halfway through the year.
I'm going to step out on a limb and say sure she is.
Her win is coming soon. And certainly, you know, every time they say that just being in contention gets you closer, and heck, maybe the next time whoever she's playing against will dump one in the water and she'll kind of back into one. But sometimes that's all it takes to get you started. So
yep,
we look for good things for her going forward. We'll be right back after this message from Titleist and Chip Shots from Golf Gods. Stay with us.
When you get in a fairway bunker, choke up on the club a little bit, and I like to aim for the top of the ball.
On long bunker shots, flatten your swing.
You want to feel down in the sand, and then use your instincts.
When you get a plug lie, all you want to do is take a steeper swing and explode down on the ball.
If you want to hit a punch shot, play the ball back in your stance.
When you're in the rough, you're going to want to hit a cut.
One more tip. Trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
From the studios of GolfGods.com in Minneapolis, this is Chip Shots, a weekly look at golf equipment news brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com, the official online pro shop of TheSandTrap.com.
This week on Chip Shots, it looks like a duck, it quacks like a duck. Is it a duck? Recently, Golf Gods started stocking the range of clubs from Pine Meadow Golf. Pine Meadow's intriguing product line features a full assortment of clubs which are based upon current bestsellers from the top OEMs and are legally designed to play like their more expensive branded counterparts at a fraction of the price. While it would be naive to think that the millions in R&D spent by the big boys aren't responsible for creating the market for these look-alike clubs, we wondered if this value package technology was as good as advertised. Judging by the customer testimonials, we'd have to say yes. Take the Command Q4 driver. With movable tungsten and aluminum weights, it's designed to play like one of the tour's more popular drivers. For a mere $99, you can create customizable launch angles and ball flight options. The driver comes stock with a low-torque Pine Meadow graphite shaft from Aldea, and it can be custom fit and custom shafted with higher-end shafts for about $160. That still leaves you with plenty of extra cash when compared to buying the $300 to $400 drivers. From high handicappers who have switched from the older technology to better players who have played the brand name clubs, the performance characteristics of these clubs seem well matched to what's advertised, and the values are quite good. With a full assortment of iron sets priced at about the cost of a single iron from the big boys, to hybrids, fairway woods, and putters, all based upon the same sale value-oriented business model, we think the value-minded golfer ought to give these clubs a look. The other nice thing is, if you are partial to a particular brand, say Ping, Callaway, or Adams, they might just have a club you'll like. Well, that's it for Chip Shots this week, brought to you by the staff of GolfGods.com. Now back to Eric and this week's podcast.
Welcome back. In our site listener forum topic segment, we'd like to tackle this whole issue of who's more mentally gifted, we, Michelle Wee or Sergio Garcia. Perhaps the question is, who is less mentally retarded when it comes to making good decisions on the golf course? So I know, Eric, you responded to that in the forum. What's your take?
Like, I don't know. What did I say in the forum? Like, I had, like, my A game, but... Or, like, my B game, so I had, like, a typo, and I typed really well, except for those 8 typos.
And well, I've been trying to do a lot of homework lately, and I just forgot how to putt.
Oh, right. So, I don't know. It's too young for me to answer this in terms of Michelle Wee, but Sergio doesn't seem to have much going on in the whole mental capacity. People will point to his putting problems, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later as well. But people point to his putting problems. He doesn't have a putting problem until he gets into the lead or near the lead, right. And that's a mental issue, I think. Mm-hmm. I've seen him 3-putt in playoffs. Saturday, he shot a blistering, you know, front nine and route to 6-under or something, and only managed to go 1-under on the back, left several putts short from, you know, 8 feet. He got near the lead, though, and couldn't close it out. Playing with Tiger on Sunday, again, I don't think he's mentally there. It's tentative is a state of mind. It's not a mechanical problem.
Right.
So,
well, I have a name for Sergio. And Sergio, should you happen to be listening, you might want to look up this guy. His name's Bob Rotella. And he's really, really good at helping people.
Like really good? Or like really, really good?
Like totally awesome.
Really? How about Fearless Golf by Dr. Gio Valiente? He's on the Golf Channel like every other minute, so.
Yeah, he is. Maybe he's too busy. Can help you.
I don't know.
I don't know if those two guys will hang out with people who wear clothes like Sergio does.
I don't know. I mean, Yellow Belly just sprang forth all day Sunday watching him. It's like, leaves a putt short. He's wearing yellow. What else are you going to call him? I don't know.
I taught a putty tat.
You did, and he kicked your butt. And he won a claret jug, so. If you have anything to add on the, you know, which is more mentally gifted or less mentally retarded, I suppose, Michelle Wee or Sergio Garcia, we'll link to our forum topic discussion in the show notes. Drop by and contribute your 2 cents or 2 pence or 2 euros or whatever you got. We'll take it. We'll be right back.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to line my feet to the right a little bit, hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip, trust your tightness.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
And welcome back. Here in our Beating Balls segment, we're going to quickly run through a couple of topics, most of them relating to the British Open, but a few here and there. Phil Mickelson makes a big deal out of going over and preparing. He went over right after the U.S. Open. He went over 2 weeks before or something like that, you know, played 2 billion holes or something like that. And a lot is made over, you know, Phil's trio of, you know, Dave Pell's the scary guy you'd cross the street to avoid, Rick Smith, who, you know, is busy hawking his swing glove with a hinge in it, and Booby Phil. They go over, they prepare. Tiger Woods shows up like 3 days before, never seen the course, never even seen a picture, says, I'm going to hit irons. Wins the thing. Phil's, you know, way back, barely makes the cut, etc. It's too much made of Phil Mickelson's preparation. I mean, it didn't do much good. There's still the execution part, but come on, you know? It took the world's best player 2 days to figure it out, or a couple holes, you know, if you listen to him.
I think, in not in favor of Phil Mickelson's routine or whatever, I think the bigger issue for Phil is he is learning how to be comfortable in his own golf game. He's improved. He's not making as many stupid mistakes percentage-wise, but it still seems like a lot to us because he's made better decisions. You know, I don't know.
That's the thing. Phil's preparation, the other way to say it is, they remove stupid before he's allowed to do it. They remove, like, they say, you're going to hit this. And right. So long as he sticks to it, he can't do something stupid. And, like, he knows that, so he's convinced himself and allows himself to be convinced of that. They're basically, they game plan to remove stupid.
They remove stupid before he does it. I like that.
They game plan to remove stupid. Mm-hmm. Tiger Woods game plans to maximize his chances of winning. Phil just tries to remove stupid.
Whatever Phil does or says, he's never going to look as smart as Tiger Woods. It's just never going to happen because he does stuff like U.S. Open 18th hole meltdowns.
Hoylake certainly was talked about beforehand as being, oh my god, they're going to eat it alive, they're going to kick its butt, whatever. It's a boring course, it's short, it's going to play fast. really redeems itself. Tiger Woods, you know, like we said earlier, says, hey, it's a great course. Did it stand up to the test?
Oh, you know, without question, it stood up to the test. I mean, everybody was singing the praises of this golf course. And, you know, consider the fact that we didn't have any wind. It was pretty benign conditions. It could have been, I mean, Tiger finished at 18 under. It was an awesome performance for him.
Right.
His whole preparation and attitude towards how he played the game may have changed if the conditions were different. Could have. And
could have. He said if the wind were up, he would have hit 3 wood instead of 2 iron, or driver instead of 3 wood.
Sure.
He was just trying to stay short of the bunkers. Whatever club kept him short, that was it.
And I think he did that. I think the course is an excellent... Of course, it's back in the rotation now.
Now it's in the rotation. Peter Dawson has said it's back in the rotation. I like to say, with no wind, it's basically a par 68, because all four of the par 5s were reachable by pretty much every player. So, say it was a par 68. Tiger Woods is now 2 under par, if it's a par 68. That 2 under par is the same as his holed eagle on the par 4 14th. So, aside from that, Tiger Woods shot even par. Again, if you kind of factor in the fact that there was no wind and the par 5s were all reachable. So, it didn't play as easy as they're really saying. A little wind, and we're suddenly on that same course... 10 strokes higher, you know, 15 strokes higher. Quick segue here into the LPGA. Carolyn Mivens has pissed off the ShopRite Classic, who's donated a ton of money to charity, all kinds of stuff. Basically, they gave the date away to the Gin Club. The ShopRite people aren't too happy about it because they feel that they had that date was theirs. They had no contract recently, but we'll link to the story. I'm tired of talking about Carolyn Mivens. I hope she's no longer a story in a year.
Allow me to say this. Quote Larry Harrison, director of ShopRite. He says, she has no integrity, none. And if the LPGA board of directors doesn't do something soon, the whole tour will have no integrity. So those are pretty strong words.
They're strong words. People threw purple paint bombs or flower bombs or whatever you want to call it on the 18th green just before Sergio Garcia and Tiger Woods came up to the green. What the heck? I mean, the British fans are long touted as being the most reserved, respectful, understanding of the game of golf. And yet we have people clicking cell phone cameras going, you know, left and right and throwing, you know, purple paint bombs. Obviously, the guy with the purple stuff wasn't a golf fan. But are British fans' reputations overrated or what, you know?
Well, I think the irony here is that the guys who threw it were part of an organization called Fathers for Justice, who are campaigning for paternal rights in custody cases.
Yeah.
So these guys are out there saying, oh, you know, we as fathers are qualified to have our children, and we're going to do that. You know, by an act of violence. I mean, hello?
We're responsible people. Look, we threw paint.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if that's really going to be positive.
Here's how the justice system over there works, which I'll give them kudos for. They already got sentenced and they're already serving time in prison.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, here it'd be like a year and a half before they got a trial, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, rotten prison. Jerks. Speaking of jerks.
Yeah, no kidding.
Dot, dot, dot. Oh, Jack Nicklaus. Hey, look at this. Jack Nicklaus says, I could have won 25 majors. What the heck, Jack? I mean, is this...
This was the most bizarre article for me. I'm reading this thinking, come on, Jack, what are you talking about? I mean, it's like he's hedging and knowing that Tiger's going to break his record.
Right. Tiger gets close. He's now at 11, of course. Jack at 18. Or if you count U.S. amateurs, Jack at 20 and Tiger's now at 14, so only 6 back, if you count those. And Jack goes... Yeah, I could have won more majors, but I wouldn't have had as much time to spend with my family.
Oh, he's such a good guy, though, Eric.
I would have prepared more for some of them and stuff like that, but I didn't have a big push to do much else. Blah, blah, blah.
Check this out. He says, there are a lot of very good players today, but there are not the great players that there were when I played.
You know what, Jack? Hello? Jack was a great player. I take nothing away from that, but... Anytime he opens his mouth lately, you know, in the past 10 years, I just find myself disagreeing, and he's just talking himself up.
Well, it's unfortunate.
If you could have won 25 majors, frickin' go win 25 majors.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it's unfortunate because he's a legend. I mean, the guy, it's 18 majors. Everybody's chasing that, and even when and if Tiger does do it, which I think he will, it doesn't take anything away from what Jack did. I mean, he set the bar.
Right. So
quit sniveling.
That's right. I'm going to skip the story on Aaron Hills. We'll link to it quickly, but basically, Aaron Hills opens in August. It's a very long golf course. It's 8,300 yards, something like 157 slope rating and a course rating of 79.8 or something obscene like that. So
79.9.
So a scratch golfer is going to shoot 80, barely.
That's not good.
So very interesting. Speaking of interesting, one of the pairings, the standard pairing, of course, at the PGA Championship in the first two rounds, pairs the U.S. Open winner, the Masters winner, and the Open Championship winner together. So we're going to have Phil Mickelson, Jeff Ogilvy, and Tiger Woods playing two rounds of golf together in a major.
Nice.
And of course, it's funny. Phil and Tiger, their troubles are obviously well known. You know, I mean, right. their dislike for each other. But every picture I see of Phil after the U.S. Open, after he blew it on the 18th hole with Jeff Ogilvy in it, he's like glaring at the trophy, saying like, "That was mine." And and Ogilvy's like, "Stay away, creepy dude." And they have their own little thing going on. It's like, you know, Phil doesn't like Ogilvy because he took the trophy away from him or something. So, interesting pairing. Not much more to say about that, but should be interesting. Quick note here, Corey Pavin shot a 9-hole tour record 26 on the front nine at the Milwaukee event that pretty much Corey is the biggest name at.
Right.
But it's a par 34, so 9-under was a 26. Or, sorry, 8-under was a 26. New record, not in relation to par, but total score 26, so...
impressive. And
he only managed one birdie on the last nine holes, so he was apparently watching Natalie Gulbis a few weeks before. All right, so some quick questions here. Is this Tiger Woods' most important major win, this Open Championship? There was, of course, his first. There were some record setters. There was the one that ended the slump at the Masters 2 years ago. Is this his most important major win?
No, I don't think it's his most important. I think it's just how Tiger is. I'd look back to some of the records.
With the death of his father and the miscut.
Nah, nope.
I don't know.
I think when he came in, he just completely redefined golf. Important, I'm not taking away. It is an important win, but...
Most important is the question. And I'm going to say yes, because I think that if he had struggled in a few majors, you know, missing the cut obviously was a big thing, but if he had struggled in this one, even if he made the cut, maybe not had a great PGA, suddenly the media's on him about, when are you going to win? Is your dad's death still affecting you, et cetera, et cetera. I think his dad's death, this was an important win to say, hey... See, that's not going to get in my way. I'm going to keep winning in tribute or because that's what I do. So I think it's an important win to shut the press up.
Mm-hmm.
I put this down here. We kind of already talked about it. Which is better, Tiger's course preparation or Phil Mickelson's little trio?
Let me think. Tiger.
Yeah, well, they both had a similar game plan. I saw Phil hitting driver a lot more than Tiger, but I don't think Phil has the long iron game that Tiger has to pull it off. So he had to hit more three woods and drivers off tees. But like I said, I think Phil's game plans a lot of times at majors are to remove stupid.
And if he can keep removing stupid, he's just going to get better.
And it's funny, Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson wins the Masters with two drivers, and Tiger Woods effectively wins the Open Championship with zero.
Yeah.
So there you
hello.
Go. Or literally one driver in 72 holes. So there. And finally, the last question here was the fact that the winner of the British Open able to not hit a driver mean that the Open Championship, and Hoylake specifically, was not a good test of championship golf? Do you think championship golf should test every club in the bag?
No, I think this was a great test of championship golf. It was not the first time that something like this has happened. It's, you know, it's all about getting the ball into the hole, and Tiger took on lots of people who were playing driver, and he still beat them.
All right.
So what does that say? What does it say about Tiger?
That's the point that I was going to make exactly. So that says it for me. And that says it for episode 31 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by thesandtrap.com. You can check us out online at thesandtrap.com or participate in our forums at thesandtrap.com/forum. This is Eric Brzeski saying ta-ta for now.
We'll talk to you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.